Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your show creator and host. I want you to know that personally, I don't do worry anymore. I learned several years ago that worry is a misuse of the creative energy. That did it for me. Unfortunately, a lot of people still do worry, which can lead them to anxiety and even chronic anxiety. Our guest today is Catherine Tristan, a woman who confronted her own tendency to worry and fret, and then took her concern to a highly creative end, learning everything she could about the topic and writing a book entitled Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. She's here to share many of the things she discovered along with her four core concepts that you can use to get yourself out of the habit of worrying and back into pleasurable living, regardless of your circumstances or the happenings of your life. During this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chats. We have two, one on theemotionalpro.com and one on Blog Talk Radio. And we also have a toll-free number, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Catherine Tristan has published articles in Parade and Psychology Today, as well as 120 articles in leading health publications under her professional name, which I hope I pronounce, Lizuski.
Lizuski.
Lizuski, ah.
That's why I went with Tristan.
Yeah. She's a member of the anxiety. No wonder you had anxiety. No, she's a member of the Anxiety Disorders Association of America and the American Association of Immunologists. And she's on the faculty at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. And you can find her on the web at whyworrybook.com. Catherine Tristan, welcome to Full Power Living.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah. Well, I was looking up some definitions of worry, and here's one I came across. Worry is thoughts, images, and emotions of a negative nature in which mental attempts are made to avoid anticipated potential threats. You've been afflicted with excessive worry. Would this fit for you? What was worry to you?
Worry to me was anticipating a disaster.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, that's where we go to the dark side of worry, that normally worry is in place as a natural system to protect us and to warn us of potential dangers. But the problem with a lot of us is that we tend to heed those warnings and amplify them to essentially elongate a shadow, and it gets worse and worse, and we become chronic worriers, or we dip into anxiety or even panic attacks when we don't manage it better. So that's kind of what happens.
So then worry is like a gift that's been given to us, as I was understanding it reading your book. And it's designed to draw our attention to things that we need to do something about. But then it ends up not feeling like a gift because we overdo it. And I love that you said your big aha moment was when you realized that whether you worried or not, that was a choice that you could make. Would you tell us more about finding out it's a choice?
You know, it's a very simple, but it's a profound idea. Most of us, when we're over-worried, chronic worriers, anxious, we tend to feel like victims, that, you know, these bad things excuse me, are happening. You know, this I have no way to control this, and so I'm worried about it. The problem is that when you don't recognize that actually you are the only one in control, but the only control that you have is how you want to think and react about a situation. You can't control losing a job, for instance, but you can control how you react to it. And when I finally had that eureka moment that I was actually making a choice, that I could learn to listen and tune in better to my thoughts, but not pay attention to all of them. I'd learn to agree or disagree and move away from the ones that were harming me or going down as a runaway train would be down to a terrible or catastrophe type of situation where most of the time that did not happen. So my empowerment became I am choosing not to agree with this, or I will choose to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I live with a worrier. Now, before the show, I told you I've been married for about 14 years. And in the last 2 years, he's gone through several changes. He lost his longtime assistant. She got injured. A few weeks of traveling he went through, being away from home. And he retired from his lifelong career. And I was watching him and working with him about this worry, and I watched him make himself actually physically ill to the point that he ended up in the hospital. And it seems to me that when someone's caught up in worry, especially if they believe that it's helpful, they don't see that they have a choice. What kinds of emergency measures could a person do if they're caught in worry and can't see that they have a choice?
Absolutely, and that is part of the fine line of when you are handling it better and when you're not managing it well. When we don't recognize that we do have a choice, and sometimes when everything seems to hit at once, that's the time when we really have to draw back on our own personal reserves and work with the negative situation. Now, what can you do when all these things are hitting you? One is that aside from just trying to balance yourself, there are physical things you can do. You can try to release some of the negativity and the stress that you feel, even by just connecting with things that you like to do, like even going out for a hike, getting out, exercise, eating better, reducing the amount of caffeine that is in your diet. You know, physically, you have to really work on the situation that he found himself in your mind, your body, and your spirit. Really, it takes all three when things hit you that way. And in your body, that's what I say, you can do the all-natural way, which is to try to exercise and take better care of yourself. Mind-wise, you remind yourself that this is a difficult situation, but you've been through so many more difficult situations in your life that you will get over it. And you tend to try to surround yourself with positive people, positive thoughts, positive ways of thinking about things, keeping a gratitude journal, what's right about my life as opposed to what's wrong. So, that would be sort of the mind in a nutshell. And then the spirit is just looking at things from a higher perspective that, your connection to your inner spirit is so important. And, can I see this in a different way? And how can I look at this in a way other than it's dragging me down to health issues? So really it takes the mind, the body, and the spirit, and there are specific ways that you can help yourself.
That was a great answer. Thank you. My husband used to argue with me that worry is what had made him a good surgeon, right? And I told him that I thought thinking a surgery through once or twice or even three times made sense, but to go over and over and over the same thing without taking any appropriate action was over the top, and it didn't make sense to me. And so I just want to tell you that he's now worrying less, and he is working with himself. I found that it had a lot to do with the imagination. He imagined a whole lot of things were going, the worst possible things were going to happen. What have you got to say about the imagination in all of this?
Well, who tends to be the prime worriers are people who are very imaginative. They're very creative, bright. They're empathetic. They take on other people's emotions, and they're very sensitive. But that can work against you. You can be bright and creative, and I call this our terrible, wonderful personalities. And so it's a two-sided coin. And on one in one situation, where which is what you're talking about, preparing for surgery, that's the helpful side of a healthy concern, whether you call it good worry or a healthy concern. The idea is, you know, if you're solution-oriented, it helps you be prepared and to stay ahead, such as if you have a test or you're going to have the surgery, but you don't obsess over it. It also helps. The good side is when you're proactive. You know, maybe you need to get fit and trim. If you're going, if you're getting too heavy, maybe you need to work on your finances. If you're worried about them, be proactive. Even with your health, if you see something going on, maybe it's time to see a doctor and get things checked out. So, and also intuition. You know, worry mangles our natural intuition. If we, for instance, are going down a street and you get the funny feeling you maybe shouldn't do that, then you pay attention to some of that type of inner talk because maybe it saves you from being mugged or worse. You go home a different way. But you don't ever refuse to go out at night. So that's the balance between when it's working for you and when it's hurting you.
Now with him, just one more area here. With him, the worries would hit in the middle of the night. He would start to worry, and then he would do some of the things that I suggested. In our case, I suggested he turn things over to God and let God work it out and not be trying to resolve everything by himself. And that worked for him, but he would wake up in the middle of the night worried. What do you do when you wake up in the middle of the night worried?
Well, it's very interesting that you say that. I had talked to someone, and he was a man, and he said, you know, I don't worry during the day. But then I wake up at night, and I can't go back to sleep. I think about my project, or you know, this or that. And so the question is, what do you do? Well, the thing is, you actually are worrying during the day. You're just suppressing it. It's there, circulating in your mind. But the question is, well, what do I do with it if I do wake up? One of the things that I suggest is, first of all, go to bed. Let's trace that back a couple of hours. Go to bed in a better state. One of the things I recommend is I call it the 5-minute mental marinade. And that simply means before you go to bed, and I do this myself, especially if I'm under stress, you know, I take 5 deep breaths, the belly breathing kind of breaths. A lot of times I cross my hands over my heart too while I'm doing this. And then I think of, you know, 5 or more things that went right during the day or that are good in my life. Then I focus for a couple of minutes on somebody that I love or something that I love to do and let that generate all kinds of wonderful feelings inside of your body. Then take 5 more deep breaths and then go to sleep. And even if you wake up in the middle of the night, you can do the same thing, this sort of a mental marinade where you're focusing away from the runaway train of those thoughts and focusing on something, what can I do? You can always get up to just get a drink, break that loop. But this mental marinade idea is a way for you to take control of those emotions.
You know, I really like that. I'm going to offer that to him. I found that after working, you know, after deciding I don't want to worry anymore, what I do if I wake up, and I think everybody must do this, I just say, I'm not going to do this. Let me just give you a quick example. I just last week went on a couple of days of a ski trip with my son and daughter-in-law and their family. And while I was on the ski trip, I got email from a friend of mine who said, I'm glad you're enjoying the snow, but I hope you're not going skiing because skiing, in my view, is the devil sport. And she proceeded to tell me that she had broken her leg some years ago and it had resulted in her having a hip replacement and a knee replacement and she'd been in pain for years and she just hoped I didn't ski. Well, at 3:30 in the morning, I woke up, and that's what I was thinking about. Now, I turned 70 on my last birthday, and part of me was going, are you crazy? You're 70 years old. You're out here skiing. But I love to ski, and I did fine. But I ended up, I was starting to rev up and stay awake, and I caught myself at it, and I just said, no, I'm not doing this. You know, if this is really a problem, I will deal with it tomorrow morning. But now is the time for sleep, and I went right to sleep.
Well, you know, that is a perfect example of the infectious nature that negative statements, negative emotions can have on another person, negative energy. So, you know, you can become infected because your mind, as I said, is always there. It's a natural system to try to alert you to possible dangers. When your mind heard that, it was thinking about it even if you didn't recognize it. But here's where you help it, is just as you indicated, you know, thank you for, what I usually say is, well, thank you for those thoughts. I know you're trying to protect me, but I don't agree. Give me thoughts that actually help me. I don't agree with this. Or I say, I simply refuse to feel that. I simply refuse to feel this way, especially if it's anxiety. So disagreeing with the thoughts that are coming out are definitely powerful, because thoughts have power, and you want to be the one to take charge of it. It's almost like thoughts are coming on a conveyor belt all the time, but you're the one who recognizes it and then try to choose which ones help you and which ones don't.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that. That feels very validating, too. I find that when I'm tired or whatever, I'm more prone to worry or get paranoid. And I have learned over the years that all I have to do is get some sleep. I get up the next morning and I go, what was I thinking about here? I can't even remember it.
So. Right, and that, you know, that's a great thing too, is that, you know, when we are tired, then our natural reserves are also drained, and that's the time to get some sleep, take a hike, do something you enjoy, get a massage, take a nice warm bath, you know, things that are self-nurturing that also allow your body to sort of recover and recuperate from all the negativity that maybe you've experienced during the day, or just being busy and stressed from just being busy.
That sounds a lot like your core concept number 4, where you actually are participating in loving yourself. You can't avoid the fact that you're loving yourself if you're taking a hot bath or getting a massage. Are you saying essentially that loving yourself is one way not to worry?
It's one way that helps build your sense of empowerment, and also when you feel more empowered, you're less likely to worry how are things going to be, because number one, you know, whatever comes my way, I can handle it, and number two, you feel connected that things happen for reasons, and whatever it is that happens, I have handled it in the past, and I will handle it in the future. So definitely you can look at things from a higher perspective, and be self-nurturing is the way to fill up your own loving energy, because once you feel that and once you are immersed in that type of energy, that's the type of energy you give off, not the negative kind that says you're going to break your leg, you know, if you ski. Mm-hmm. It's the loving energy that says, have fun, I know you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. I actually did fall on the ski trip on the side of a mountain. My ski came apart and had to be fixed and so forth, but I did not hurt a single thing, and I had people showing up to give me help. So maybe that's it. Evidence.
Yeah, and we have help, and you know, things can happen, and even if you did, you know, hurt yourself, then that would be something that you'd have to deal with, obviously, but you know, and maybe it was that little seed, that kernel of negativity in the back of your mind that gives reality to the fact that you could be hurt, whereas in another sense, you know, what you think about expands, and so what you think about in another way you can bring about. So if you bring about and think about more, I am confident, I am good at this, I've done this before, I am fit, I am trim, I am healthy, that's what you bring more to you. So, you know, when you go with the idea that I can think about what I think about, I will bring about, then why not bring in more peace and joy and love and energy, good energy into your life?
I like that. What I think about, I will bring about. That's
absolutely
good. Is that your own quote, or did you get that from somebody?
I heard that. I was explaining to someone else. I said, you know, what you think about expands. What you focus on creates your reality. And she said, oh, what you think about, you'll bring about. And I said, that's so much simpler. I like that. Mind if I use it?
Uh-huh. Well, now, through your research, you've come up with 4 core concepts that I mentioned, and I want to get into those, but we're up to our first break. So we're talking today with immunology researcher, author, and former worrier, Catherine Tristan, whose book is Why Worry? And I'd like you to call in your questions now. Remember, our number is 888-498-0570. And come on back to find out why taking risks can help you recover from a lifetime of worry. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
So welcome back to Full Power Living.
Upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on EmotionalPro.com. Next week, I'm talking with Arteria Stevens about a very personal and powerful story, the subject of her book, Don't Touch Me. Many people don't think it's possible to tear down the protective walls from years of extreme emotional pain to have a full and good life, and Arteria is going to share how this can be done. If you can't listen to our live broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio or EmotionalPro.com, don't forget you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And also thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Today we're talking with Catherine Tristan, who's author of Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. Her website is whyworrybook.com. So, Catherine, I found this kind of fascinating. You mentioned it in your book. You've worked for years in immunology research, and you found immunology, the body system for immunizing, has a lot of parallels with worry. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. And a lot of people have heard of and know of the biological immune system. It's a first alert system. It's powerful. It's rapid. That's why we stay so healthy most of the time. It has cells and proteins that attack and destroy the bacteria and viruses that are in our environment. But what I also found out is that we have a psychological immune system, and worry is part of our psychological immune system. But instead of using cells and killer proteins, it uses thoughts. And the thoughts are sent to us almost robotically, like our immune system works robotically, based upon what we've learned, our experiences, and our personalities. And just as the biological immune system, when it goes overboard, can attack us, like as in lupus, multiple sclerosis, things like that, that also, thoughts can do the same thing when we let them go overboard. We can become anxious, have panic, or even go to the opposite route and become depressed. So the good thing about the psychological immune system is that it's under our control. we may not be able to control the first thoughts that come into our minds, but we do have the power to think about, to engage, and also to agree or disagree with subsequent thoughts. And that's how it differs from the biological immune system, and that's what's in our favor to help us have a happier life, is understand this is how our mind is working.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, that gets us back to the four core concepts, because the first one is that we always have choices. It's not necessarily that we can choose what happens in our life. What is it that we get, that we have choice about, Catherine?
Well, if you think about control, we really have very little control over our external world, don't we? I mean, lots of things happen, and bad things can happen. So, you know, choice really is more a matter of what can I do with what happens to me, recognizing that your power is in how you react and how you choose to think about a situation, that we really are not victims. Even in the worst of situations, you know, people who have been in concentration camps, Viktor Frankl has a wonderful book that's older, but Man's Search for Meaning, that even under the worst situation, we can resolve to live and see it from a different perspective, even if it's not as bad as that. We can choose to change how we think about anything.
You know, you just brought back a memory. About a year and a half ago, my husband and I took a trip across the country on the train. We were on the train for 5 days, 4 nights. And on the next to last night, the people who were pet sitting for us, and my husband's very attached to his kitty cats, called and said that they couldn't find one of our cats. And that would normally be enough fuel to keep my husband up all night. But I asked him, I said, look, you're on a train. There's nothing you can do about it. I talked with the people and told them what to do to set it up so that the cat could come back. And by the way, he did return. Okay. But at the time I said, there's nothing you can do. You're on this train. You can't control a darn thing. But you could help the cat find his way home. And I asked him as he was lying in his bed to use his imagination to see the cat returning to his bed, to the place where he stayed, and the cat came home.
See, I love that, because that's exactly how things happen. And part of my book, I have a that touches on this type of thing, is that the magic of coincidence, you know, the woo-woo side of things, that, yes, we can put out energy to manifest what we would like to have happen. And I think that was great advice. See that the cat coming home, or if you've got something else going on, see yourself doing this difficult thing in a way that you feel happy about, that you feel empowered about. See it, visualize it, and put it out there. And that is how you attract like energy into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very interesting, because he worried about having problems with the pets. And our dog got lost and our cat got lost, and they both were recovered with no problem. It was very, very interesting.
Well, and, so. And the other side of the coin is when you focus on a negative side, or you also focus on something not happening, or that you can't do this, the energy works the same way. If you feel sincerely that you can't do this, there's a possibility that you actually won't do that, because you are programming your mind and your energies not to do it, not to have it succeed
right.
in your life. So we turn things around. Instead of focusing on what is not possible, which I call terribleizing, I use the word possibilizing. Focus, turn it around and focus on what could happen and the positive possibilities of things. And that helps draw that same energy to you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I learned that years ago. Our listeners probably have heard this. My son, his bird flew off. He had a little cockatiel, and it flew off at dusk and went into the neighbor's yard, and we were unable to recover it. And we were out looking. It was a very wooded area, and he was crying. He was about 12, I guess. Oh, I've lost my bird. I've lost my bird. And I said, what are we doing out here if you've lost your bird? You think you're going to find a bird you've already lost? You have to make up your mind. Is it your bird and it's coming back to you, or is it lost? And he said, oh, no, it's my bird and it's coming back to me. And I had him start repeating that instead. And it took overnight, but he got the bird back.
Well, you know, that's a fabulous example because I do that with things, too. I don't have birds. I do have a beautiful 60-pound rescue dog, but luckily I haven't had a problem with losing her yet. But one of the things that I do is I claim things. You know, if I have lost my car keys and I go, where did I put those things? I actually see myself finding it. I claim that. I know that is, those are my car keys. I want those car keys. I claim those car keys as mine. Mm-hmm. And then I'm open to the outcome of that. And a lot of times just by claiming energy, whether it's the bird or car keys or whatever, that somehow that is draws that to you.
I totally agree. And I have a new one I've just developed. You know, as you get older, you tend to walk into a room and go, what am I doing in here? Or where did I put this?
You too.
And so I have a new affirmation. I am a creature of habit. And what I mean by that is that I usually put things in one or two or maybe three different kinds of places if I've lost them. And so that reminds me to go back and look in those places, and I usually find it.
Well, that's a great way to actually claim that. And I find as you get older, one of the things I try to do also is to do things more purposely. You know, it's easy to get scatterbrained or just not paying attention to what we're doing in the present moment. I try to live a lot more in the present moment, and I also try to live more purposely. If I'm putting my keys down, I'm thinking, I'm putting my keys down, or that. And I think that, and if you want to remember things more, you add emotion to something. You know, if you're really trying to remember something, add emotion as well as focus on it for a longer period of time than we normally do. So those are just quick little tools for when you're getting a little older to how to remember things a little better.
All right. So now the second core concept is about your outlook. And I have another quick story. The day before Christmas Eve in 2012, a big 40-foot tree fell down the hill away from our house. And it turned out it was connected to another 40-foot tree that was aimed to fall on our house, right? And that meant we had to do something about it on Christmas Eve. And someone suggested, oh, you've got a neighbor who's in the construction business. Go get him to help. He propped the tree up overnight. He knew somebody who had just been cutting trees for him, had them out here at 7 o'clock in the morning, and by 2 in the afternoon, the second 40-foot tree had been cut down and cut up into pieces, and the yard was cleaned up, and we were free to go on with our Christmas, right? My husband's response was, we have had a terrible 2 days. My response was, we have had a wonderful, miraculous 2 days. The tree didn't fall on the house at the same time the other one fell. We had somebody who was available to help. They came on Christmas Eve day at 7 in the morning. We're still free to go have our Christmas. Talk about how people have different outlooks and how it affects worry.
Well, and I think a lot of that is habit. A lot of it is just this is the way it's been all my life, and maybe my parents were the same way, or my natural personality is to kind of be that way. But the thing about it is that we're always able to change our outlook. You know, that I have a number of outlook makeovers that I talk about. And, you know, I think we need to say, am I willing to consider how I can change this my view of this problem? How can I turn my view around? And, you know, some of the big triggers are perfectionism, blaming and anger. And to turn things around, you become less perfectionistic. And the way you turn that around is to become more flexible rather than perfectionistic. Turn that around to being for flexibility. It doesn't have to be my way. It doesn't have to be this way. I can be flexible and open. And blaming, instead of blaming, why did this happen, I think what that tends to do is bring more negativity into it. And in its natural state, blaming maybe helps us to define what went wrong so it won't happen again. But the antidote to blaming is gratitude. What is right about the situation? And in write about it, you know, keep a gratitude journal. Write down every day or think every day things that have gone well. And anger is also a natural emotion that, that in its good state can help us because of if something is wrong. Say you see you know, somebody being bullied, well, you get angry and you step in and do something about that. But over-anger does not help. And so we need to cultivate clarity of expressing our emotions. So I think turning things around, outlook makeovers, is how we can choose to change what we look at. And just a real quick one, when I was going to New York at one point for a scientific conference, and I thought, New York, oh no, that's kind of a concrete jungle and, you know, too many people and tunnels. And then I thought, you don't know that. And I think, you know, I understand that you're worried about that, but let me think of it a different way. You know, it's a cosmopolitan city. There are all kinds of things to do and see. And I have to tell you, when I turned that around and came back from New York, I thought that city was magical. I had a great time. But I had to talk to myself and embrace the unknown, but be okay with that. And it was fun.
Yes. You have that story in the book, too, in Why Worry. Okay, we have a listener who, I think you were here with us last week, Cynthia, but she doesn't like to talk, so it's all written. She says, it seems that my entire being is based on my job and how much money I make. I worry all the time that people are judging me and my work, even though I make the highest bonuses each year. This sounds like perfectionism. I'm always sick to my stomach and don't sleep well. I always feel overwhelmed and am cranky a lot. I'm 55 years old. Is there help for me? Thank you for that question, Cynthia.
And I would say when you I would say you're saying that, you know, the job and the money thing, and the what I heard was people are judging me. But what I hear more is I am judging me, that I am not worthy unless I have the good job, unless I'm making the top bucks, unless I'm accomplishing. And so I hear in that statement a need to be more self-appreciative and a less of a need to accomplish and more of a need to be okay no matter what you are doing, no matter where you are, self-nurturing. So I think in terms of being sick and overwhelmed, yeah, that's your interior side holding a red flag out there saying, no, we don't want to do it this way. Well, you're doing it this way, but we need to change that programming into being okay with yourself the way you are. So I think that you need to make some definite changes in your life to be happier.
Catherine, I was just remembering I have a daughter who tends to be a perfectionist. She's in her 40s. And when she went to college, I heard her tell my younger child, my son, one day that she always anticipated that she was going to fail. And that was the way she made sure that she did a good job. And I just flashed on that. If I'm doing a good job, like Cynthia, you're doing a good job, well and good enough to be getting the bonuses, is it possible that I might also be saying, well, one day I won't do a good job and I better keep vigilant and keep on myself, even if nobody else is, just to make sure that I do a good job? What do you think about that, Catherine?
Well, and that could be the idea of also when is enough enough? You know, when am I safe and okay? So, yes, you do want to do a good job, and that's the balance of perfectionism, is that we want to do the good job. Otherwise, we are judging ourselves as being incompetent. And at some point, you may, you know, make a mistake. How do you feel when you make a mistake, I guess, would be a question, too, and I would guess awful. So I think that's part of the problem is opening up to other possibilities, learning that you don't have to be the perfect worker, the perfect human being, whether you're a mother or a single person. You know, you don't have to be that perfect. And I would just work on myself from that, being more open and flexible and judging yourself less.
That sounds really good. We have another caller here, and I'm going to ask you the question, and you can think about it while we take our break. Is habitual complaining a kind of worrying? How can we change complaint in ourselves and others? Okay? You think on that. We're going to take a break here. Call us with your questions, 888-498-0570. We're talking today with author and former worrier, Catherine Tristan, who has written a book called Why Worry? We're going to be stepping through the doorway to healing from excessive worry when we return. So come on back to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. We're back here on Full Power Living. I'm doing a series of discussions about anger in the family, and if you're interested, write to me at admin@RaiseIncredibleKids.com. All right, Catherine, before our break, I was asking this question posed by someone on the chat. Is habitual complaining a kind of worrying, and how can we change complaint in ourselves and others?
Yes, I would say it definitely is. It's a type of emotion that keeps you constantly cranky. Things aren't right. Your life is never quite happy because things are just never right, you know. And so when we complain, what we're focusing on is what's wrong about a situation. And when we focus on what's wrong, we bring more of that into our lives. One of the things that you can do is simply, when you hear yourself complaining, try to turn that around. And one of the ways to do that is to do what I call possibilizing. You know, isn't it possible that this is not the worst possible situation? You can say things and create statements to try to reprogram your mind, because what we're talking about for a chronic complainer is a mind that's been wired into doing that. And how you get around that is to rewire your brain, essentially, or to focus on other thoughts that change actually how you react to situations, but that takes time and effort. You could begin by putting post-its up if you really are interested in changing, and something like, I am learning to flow with life, or I'm getting better at handling obstacles. This too shall pass is one thing that my mother, a single parent of five kids, used to always say, and she's right. We all grew up and things were actually okay. So I think learning to reprogram how you're thinking about it is important, and also focusing on what's right about a situation, not what's wrong. A complainer maybe should keep a gratitude journal every day. Focus on what is right about the situation rather than how I need to blame someone or even myself.
Thank you. Core concept number three is about taking risks. How does taking risks? Oh, I was going to tell you about something regarding that question that Cynthia brought up, and this is relevant here too. As a therapist, many years ago, I discovered a little game. It's called Mastermind, where you try to figure out a code that someone else has set up and you have X number of times to do it. And it's a wonderful game for teaching yourself to take risks, because it doesn't hurt anybody if you just start wildly guessing, or you put all red on one row or something like that. So I want to just recommend that game to have somebody play it with you and you practice taking risks. Tell us why taking risks works, Catherine.
Well, I love that idea that there's a practical example of that, because, you know, most of us who are worriers or anyone who's anxious, that's the last thing we want to do is take any risks. We love staying in our comfort zones because it seems safe there. But the idea of risk is that once you've done the inner work, and I don't say just start taking risks right away. I say, you know, core is, goes from choice that you can choose to change your outlook. And once you do that, once you start doing that inner work, now you are more self-empowered and self-confident. And so now that's the time to take a risk. One of the things is remind yourself that 85% of what we worry about never happens. This is scientific studies, 85%. And that even when bad things happen, that 80% of people think they handled it better than they anticipated. So, that is in our favor as well. But when we need to take a risk, you say you're tuned up, you're not going to go anywhere unless you step into the things that used to bother you. Maybe it's trying to get that magical relationship. Maybe it's asking for a raise. Maybe it's going someplace that you haven't gone before. But you need to think, you know, how can I get out of my comfort zone to improve my situation or to step back into the passions that I used to have in my life? And can I take the leap of faith again to believe in me and my ability to create change? But little by little, risking a little at a time, and again, create a list of things you would like to do and see how you can start taking steps to accomplish those, to get those in your life. I call that creating a five list. Find five things that you really want to do and visualize it. Create a vision board. See yourself doing it, and then take some risks to accomplish that.
Well, I think core concept number four is that you save the best for last.
It's, I did.
embracing your spirit, which you call the doorway to healing. And so one of the things that I have learned over the years, Catherine, that I kept seeing over and over in your book, is I have learned to see our earth as a giant school to which we've all come in order to learn and grow. And you keep talking about how when things that we worry about come up, those are really learning opportunities. What's your take on that?
That is absolutely true. And, of course, it depends on what one's philosophy is, but that is totally my philosophy. I am here to learn. And it took me a lot of years to get over the worry, but I forgive myself for that, which is also a lesson, and that I have learned, and I am now trying to give that back. But the thing is, everything that we are today we are what we are today because of the things that have happened to us, good and bad, which are labels we put on our experiences. But when you look at things from a higher perspective, a lot of times you can see you were moved along in ways that you were needing to be moved along. And that the other side of the coin is that we have help, and that things happen, or people come into our lives, or events happen to move us along into growth, and the coincidences happen when we need them to happen, and that we can draw more of that even into our life by opening ourselves up and asking for help of the highest type. And even science now is trying to bridge that gap a bit. You know, there are a number of studies that scientists are doing now, and there are things called neurotheology, which is trying to marry the idea of the divine or spirit side with some of the science. So we're not there yet, but I think they're taking steps. And this is really a fun and engaging part of trying to get over worry. And I love embracing the spiritual side.
I do too. Okay, so I want you to take us through a worry. Suppose I've been unemployed for a year. I finally have an opportunity to get a real job. I've been hired, but I have 2 weeks before I start. I start to worry. Can I handle the work? Will I be able to learn fast enough? Have I misrepresented my abilities or experience in any way? Will I get up on time so that I'm not late? Are my clothes right? Will I be able to drive there without getting myself lost? Did I ask for too much money? How do I go about step by step dealing with this worry?
Well, the first thing that you do is learn to hear it, where you actually bring it out. One of the things you could do is even to write about it, sometimes just to snare those thoughts out of our mind. And even studies show that writing about your worries 2 times a week for about 20 minutes, that will help gain you some clarity. But also, when you realize that you may be focusing on what are the dangers, what's wrong about the situation. I would see myself every day. I would meditate. I would spend at least 10 minutes, 15 minutes every day sitting quietly and seeing myself in this job, seeing myself confident, seeing myself happy, seeing me being productive, giving and also receiving as well back from this job. I would do the groundwork because worry is helping you. Maybe get some new outfits. Do things also that you're worried about. Learn about the company. Learn about what the job might entail. You know, do some of that groundwork. You'll feel better about it. Be proactive and solution-oriented, but also put out there exactly how you'd like this to come. And then, as I said, don't go to bed worrying about it. Do the 5-minute mental marinade and remind yourself during the day that you are capable and able to do this and get what you want in your life.
You know, this has come up 2 or 3 times while we were talking. The idea that if I am going to take a job and I think that I'm doing a worse job than other people are telling me they're doing, or they hired me for the job because they think I can do it, if I'm continually worrying that that may not be true, in a way I'm disrespecting those people, am I not?
You're absolutely. They see something in you that you don't want to see. And is it a protection? Are you afraid to fail? Whereas they're not afraid you're going to fail. They see this. They realize they can detect that energy in you. And maybe it's a protection like, well, I might fail. And in which case you're saying, if I do fail, at least I knew I was. So that is definitely disrespectful of them and actually of your own talents and energy. Is see yourself whole and powerful and able to do that job. See yourself doing that.
That's really good. Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, people are very busy, Catherine. How can we tune into our own inner sources of wisdom and guidance in the midst of a very busy life? I hear you say, take, you know, if I'm not employed, take 5, 10 minutes or 15 minutes to meditate and all that. But how do we connect with our own intuition?
Well, one of the things to do immediately is to be less busy where you can. And one of the things you can do is try to reduce the amount of time, for instance, that you spend checking that iPhone. I say take an e-holiday once in a while because I found myself checking that little green light too much on my phone all the time. And okay, that means there's emails to check. But I think just withdrawing a little bit, being less busy, allowing your mind a break, whether it's quiet. It doesn't take, you know, 10 minutes. If you can't afford 10 minutes a day to sit quietly and just close your eyes, then you need to be changing your schedule around because that is too busy and too stressful. And I also think even taking time, just as we talked about before, for physical exercise, that helps reduce some of the stress. And you see things differently. So I think building in some smile time, that, you know, when we smile, we release endorphins. Even if we don't mean it, the endorphins are released. But if we mean it, I think we have even more endorphins. And sometimes we just have to step back. And I say cut class or take a mental health day. I mean, honestly, sometimes you just need to reboot a little bit. And so take some time off just to give yourself that rest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one other thing is that has fascinated me. It seems that most of the people I know who worry actually believe that worrying makes things work out. My own learning is that worrying is what keeps you busy until the way things are going to work out occurs. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we are our own scientists, and we say, hey, you know, I worried about that, and it didn't happen. But the thing is, when science has looked at this case, like, well, you know, do people who worry more actually benefit more? And what, you know, when they do the studies show that people who don't worry, it also doesn't happen to. But, you know, you can see that by thinking by cause and effect, I worried, it didn't happen, then I should continue to worry. But the thing is, it actually isn't true, and that 85% what we worry about is not going to happen anyway. So that actually is not true when we are forming that conclusion, but it's easy to have that conclusion.
That's great. So what's the biggest benefit to you personally that you've gotten as a result of mastering worry in your life?
The biggest thing that I've gotten is an expansion of my life. Fear and worry contracts energy. It contracts us. It contracts our talents. It keeps us safe in a nice little spot that we never get out of. When I overcame my worry and was able to begin stepping out of my comfort zone, I didn't always succeed. Sometimes I lapsed back. But I learned an expansion of energy. And when you expand energy, you draw other things to you. I've written this book. I've traveled all over the world. I talk to people. I have every day I give thanks for what I am today and what I can give back. And the expansion of energy brings you happiness and peace and power. And that, isn't that what we all want?
Amen. For sure.
Amen, sister. That's get out there and start doing.
Yeah. That's really great. Really great. Well, this is a very interesting topic. As you can tell, it's one I've been working with over the last 14 years, having married a worrier after years of breaking through my own tendencies to worry. And I just want to thank you. I've learned some specific things that I can offer to my husband that I think will work better than what I've been offering him. And I want to emphasize that I'm a therapist with 40 years of experience. It's not like I don't have a few tricks up my sleeve, but I have learned some new ones from you. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I've been taking notes on what you've said, too, so that has helped me.
Okay. Well, also, you know, I really love the way our personal difficulties that we have can be translated into good, not only for ourselves, but for others. So I thought I'd thank you for worrying, because when you worried, then you realized you had a choice about whether you worried or not, and you started to do the research, and now you've shared what you found out with us through your book, Why Worry? And I want to thank you for going through that process and also for being with us here on Full Power Living today.
Oh, it's been my absolute joy. It's been a great conversation. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. So join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time and noon Eastern for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Next week, Arteria Stevens is going to bring us her personal, powerful story of healing sexual abuse, depression, low self-esteem, and other pain, and turning it into something beneficial. We're going to be talking about her book, Don't Touch Me. And please write to me, Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com. Tell me where you are and your reaction to Full Power Living. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.